No, no, no. She's not a medical doctor, but she can sure cure your tax problems or your financial woes. She's the how-to girl. It's the Dr. Friday Show. If you have a question for Dr. Friday, call her now, 737-WWTN. That's 737-9986. So here's your host, financial counselor and tax consultant, Dr. Friday.
All right, I'm Dr. Friday, and I'm here live in studio. You probably hear my dogs in the background having a little chit-chat at the neighborhood, but we are going to talk a little bit first about the new bill that the governor has put out there concerning the franchise tax board and the refunds that the business operating in Tennessee could be heading towards. This has not yet been signed. So this is a bill that he has put. It's the Senate Bill 2103, which will change how we complete the franchise excise tax and not having the property tax calculation in there, which is pretty big. I mean, they're saying that's going to reduce revenue for the state of over $400 million beginning the year that this goes into place. So it will be an interesting, this only applies to businesses that file franchise and excise tax. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually passes. And we'll stay on top of it to see if there's any changes. And nothing I read in here does it say that it's going to go backwards. So it looks like to me it's really going to go into effect for 2024, not in 2023. All right, let's see if we can go to the hill. Oh, the phone lines here in the studio are 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. And it looks like we've already got Jay on the line, which is awesome. Hey, Jay, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you so much for your taking my call.
Sure.
My wife had a lot of health issues last year. And so, like $217,000 in medical expenses.
Okay.
And so, anyway, we have a high deductible health plan, $10,000, and we're on the hook for that. Anyway, so we obviously we exceeded that, and so we're having to pay all that. So one of my questions was, can we write off the full $10,000 or we've had to work out payment plans with some of the doctors or the hospitals and so forth. We're making payments of several hundred dollars a month.
You'll only write off what you physically have paid. So it may take you a couple years to pay off the $10,000. I mean, unfortunately, this, you know, it's always our worst nightmare in all honesty, but hopefully she's doing well. But in answer to your question, there's going to be two sides. One, you will be able to put that on the Schedule A under medical, whatever you've paid, but also we lose the first 7.5 of our adjusted gross income. So, you know, depending on how much money you make and if you have mortgage interest, property taxes, sales tax, charitable contributions, will you exceed, are you guys under or over the age of 65?
I'm 66 and she's 63.
Okay, so you're going to have a total of in the ballpark of like $29,000 is your standard deduction.
Okay, and so that'll be the standard. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right. So all right. That answers that question. Now, I've done ministry work for several years. I've been with other congregations where I was issued a 1099. I started with a new congregation in February of 23. Well, they issued me a W-2 instead of a 1099, but they didn't withhold anything. So, how do I move forward with that? I've always had a 1099 so I could write off office expenses and so forth. So,
right. So they gave you a W-2 with just box one completed, like a statutory employee.
I'd have to look at it. Let me see what box is completed.
Sure.
It'll take me a second. I've got it laid out here.
Because I'm assuming that if it's just box one, you can actually choose in your software to roll that to a Schedule C, which will then be, you'll be able to write off your expenses. Because what they're basically saying is that you're a statutory employee, which means we didn't withhold Social Security, we didn't withhold Medicare, we didn't do anything besides pay this person theoretically like a subcontractor.
Okay, so what I've got on box one is 21, or the dollar amount.
Uh-huh.
And box 20, box 3, they show Social Security wages and Medicare wages.
All right, so so box 3 and 5 have numbers, and so do box 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, all of them have numbers?
Box 1 has
yes.
a dollar amount in it. Box 2 is 0. Box
okay.
3 has the same dollar amount in it.
Right.
And box 5 has the same, but 4 and 4, okay. 1 or 2 is
okay.
0, 4 is 0, 5 is 6, and so forth.
Oh.
All the rest of them
so,
are 0.
So they did not withhold any Social Security, and they did not pay your Medicare.
They didn't pay any.
They did not. They put zeros on all those. So then
right.
in your tax software, or if you're doing your own taxes, you should be able to roll that over to a Schedule C and treat it as, I mean, at this point, I'm not too sure why they didn't just do it as a 1099, but that's not us to question. So you're going to go ahead and write off the expenses because they truly are treating you as a subcontractor. They did not pay you like an employee.
Okay. So
does that make sense? So you're just going to roll that over and then it should bounce on. So it's not going to show up on line one of your your 1040 or line 7, wherever the
okay.
W-2, it's going to show as subcontract or 1099 self-employment.
Okay. And then the third thing is I was 66 and a half in October, so I started drawing Social Security. And so
mm-hmm.
Any help there or whatever?
No, I mean, as long as you drew it on your full retirement age, whatever that might be, then there's no penalty. They may tax you, but there's no penalty for doing it. If you drew it early, then you have to be careful with how much you've earned, or they'll make you pay $1 for every $2 over.
Okay, so Social Security is still taxable, but I was 66
yes.
and a half, you know, in October, so that was my full retirement age.
Yeah, still so taxable, but they can't take back any of your other earnings.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you.
No problem, sir.
Hopefully that helps,
and hope your wife feels better, okay?
Oh, she's doing much better. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. All right, thanks. All right, let's take Kevin, I guess, Kevin in Nashville. Hey, Kev.
Hi. How are you, Friday?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad, thanks. A question about my 1099, looks like the B section. It says that there are short-term transactions and long-term transactions which are not reported to the IRS and those which are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that even those which are not reported to the IRS, that those amounts need to be reported on my 1040?
Right. Under Schedule D, you're going to show them. If you're using a tax software, it will say reported or not reported, and you'll just check the proper box. But yes, there still need to be reported. The difference is your basis isn't reported, which is more concerning, because if they received how much it was without basis, they could, if you don't report it, they're
yeah.
going to make an assessment that none of it had a basis. So you want to
okay.
report it just like your 1099 or the Schedule B has.
Okay, perfect. That was all I wanted to know. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks. All right, let's
okay.
see DJ in Nashville while we're on the roll here. Hey, DJ.
Hey there, Dr. Friday. Thanks for taking the call, and thanks for the help you
sure.
give everybody here every week.
Sure.
Great. Hey, here's the question. My brother passed away last year, and I inherited his IRA. As
okay.
per instructions, I put those funds into a quote-unquote inherited IRA account. And the instructions also said that RMDs must start by 12/31 of the year after death. Like I say, he passed
right.
away last year. However, all well and good, and I understand the 10-year rule on that the whole bit. However, I noticed a note that was kind of buried in there, and it says, if the original account holder did not take an RMD in the year of death, an RMD must be taken from the account by 12/31 of the year the original account holder died. I didn't
right.
do that because I didn't know about it.
Well. You shouldn't have. Normally, you would not be the responsible person for that. Normally, the custodial person, let's just say it was JP Morgan, whoever, it doesn't make a difference. Whoever they are, before they distributed the money to you, they should have you may have to ask, but they should have done that distribution. That is their job, to make sure that the RMD was pulled in the name of the deceased. So that way, when you filed his final tax returns, or whoever handled it, would have filed that as part of his income, or to the estate, if the money may have been pulled and put into the estate and theoretically distributed to you, but it would have been taxed in 2023 instead of 2024 to you. Either way, you might want to backtrack just to make, were you also the executor, or were you just the beneficiary of this particular account?
Both. I am the executor of his will and the beneficiary of that particular account, okay, among others.
Okay. So I would probably, just for the fiduciary side of things, go back to whoever had that money, ask them first if there had been a distribution done prior to them distributing the funds to you as POD. And then I'm assuming it was, you know, to you. And then if there wasn't, then we need to go back and at least they can't go back and do the distribution, but your estate can go back and make a correction and pick that money up, because theoretically it would have been taxed to the estate, which may have been a roundabout way directly to you, DJ, depending on if there's a federal ID and a true estate opened, or a trust that had been opened, or if everything was just POD to you. So, you know, not sure the whole situation, but you might want to review to make sure, because it, you know, bottom line is someone may not pay tax in 2023 on money that should have been taxed.
Well, and that is certainly the case, because I could see how much was in the account prior to its distribution to me and subsequent to its distribution to me, and that amount didn't change. So they did not do a distribution to my brother prior to or after that. So I'm just wondering what kind of trouble I'm in, and how do I get around this, because I wasn't informed of this particular rule at the time.
Right. Well, I mean, I'll be honest, the IRS has been pretty good in my experience with these particular situations. It's better to be the person to go back and tell them, in my opinion, than it is for them to possibly find out 3 years from now and then penalties, interest, and everything else, right? Here you have honest mistake. Hey, as soon as I found out, went back, corrected, amended my return, added the RMD. Here it is. Because in theory, you need to take that distribution as well, because it's right now growing tax-free in that account. And as you know, RMDs had to come out.
So yeah, understood. I just thought I didn't have to do that until 12/31 of 2024.
Nope, you're going to do a double dip this year and then file them both into this year, because you don't want to go back. And then you're going to explain that the first distribution was the heir that the, however you want to put it, my opinion, that the prior custodial did not live up to.
Well, the prior custodian was the federal government. He worked for the Department of the Interior.
There you go. That explains it all to me, DJ. No. I mean, it's really just making it right, so that way they can't say that you didn't live up to what you found out at the time you found it out. That's really what it comes down to.
Let's hope the IRS is as honorable as you seem to think they are.
Well, 28 years, you get good and bad, but I think under this, we have had, this happens more time than I like to tell you, DJ, you know, because just like you said, it is not blatantly out there as everyone knows now, wait, I've got 10 years to do this, or I've got these numbers. No one pushes that. And I do blame the custodian, the people that are managing the funds, because they should know that before it gets distributed.
Great. But thanks for the help.
You know, no problem, DJ. Thanks. All right. We're going to take our first break. When we get back, we'll get more of the phone calls. 615-737-9986. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty, we are back here live in studio, and we are here to take your calls. If you've got questions, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. As we all know, it's April 6th, so it is time for everyone. If you have not completed your taxes, and you're probably going to be working the next few, we got almost a week, almost 10 days to get these done. But if you aren't sure you're going to get there, you're not too sure if you'll be able to get it finished, then my suggestion is definitely file that extension. It is so important to have an extension filed so that you can then make sure that if you're running late, you're not hit with failure to file on time penalties. So again, if you're not sure if you're going to get them done, then make sure you file that extension. Sometimes life gets in the way and we don't always know what's going to follow with that. So we, you know, just making sure we have what we need and when we need it. And so make sure you don't forget things on your taxes. Unlike when we were talking to DJ, which was not something that was forgotten, but many times I'll have people that come in and they'll say, oh, I just got another Schedule B. Is that going to be something I need to deal with? Or I forgot a W-2 or, you know, whatever. Just go through your information. Make sure, I mean, you can always fix if you forgot something. But it's kind of nice not to have to worry about going backwards if you can actually get things fixed the way you need them to be fixed. So again, just making sure you have everything the way you need it. So that way, when you hit the send button, to the best of your ability, you have managed to take care of what you need to take care of. And if you've got questions, you can join the show at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. I will say that we also have run into many emails this last week about medical deductions. And again, keep in mind that depending on if you're single, married, over the age of 65, under the age of 65, what your standard deduction is, you have to be able to exceed that. And plus, whatever that is, you also have to take whatever your taxable income is and remove the first 7.5% of it. So, you know, if you have $10,000 of income, you got the first 7.5% of that that you're going to deduct off. And then everything above that will become part of your itemizing. They don't add everything. So it's very difficult to maximize medical deductions. So if you're working with that concept, you need to make sure, A, that you're making sure you're tracking everything, all of your trips back and forth to the pharmacist or to the doctors or to the chiropractor or whatever, because you do get medical miles. That is not as high as individual working miles, but still you get that along with obviously all of your out-of-pocket costs to see if you can actually do that, see if you can actually itemize. And if you can, then you can maximize that deduction. Other than that, you want to make sure that in that same scenario, there used to be people were tracking all of their sales tax paid. But since the standard deduction went up, I have fewer and fewer people that do that because the salt tax, no matter what, I had a gentleman that came in last week and he had more than $40,000 in property taxes on all these different properties that he owns. They're investment properties, but as we all know, we can deduct property tax. Well, the problem is you can only deduct in property tax, sales tax, $10,000. That's the most. And if it's married filing separately, it's $5,000 each. But if it's married or single, it's $10,000. So if you have $40,000 in property tax thinking you're going to be able to itemize, it's not going to happen. He had no mortgages, so he didn't have very much in charitable contributions or medical. So even though he had all of that money that he was paying in property taxes, that wasn't going to work as far as the concept of itemizing. So you do want to make sure that if that's your situation, that you're following through with that. Because, you know, sometimes it sounds like a great idea until somebody has to tell you it didn't happen. Also, I don't know about anyone else, but this year seems to be a year where people are having to pay more money. Many times it's money that people are not expecting to have to pay. So, you know, if you've prepared your tax return and that tax return is, I don't know, let's just say you owe $2,000 and you normally don't, or maybe something happened. So, because sometimes people change jobs in the middle of the year, sometimes multiple times, and that usually does mess it up. But in some of these cases, just the fact of the new tax code going into effect, whatever, it affected the payroll systems. And so people are getting less coming out of their paychecks and no one looks at their pay stubs any longer, it seems like. So when you're doing your payroll and you're not seeing, oh, well, I got a little bit more money. So maybe you thought you got a raise, so you're going to get more money. Anyways, that money is now, you're short, right? So you need to think about your W-4 form. I don't care if you are truly single with three kids, or if you're married with four kids or one kid, or you don't have any children. You need to, if you owe money, you need to make an adjustment. It can be simply leave it at whatever it is, and you know you owe $2,000 and you've got 10 paychecks left. Take $200 a paycheck, go to line four in the W-4 where it says additional withholding. Only put a number in there. Do not put zeros everywhere else. Do not complete anything other than the top where it says married, single, head of household, whatever. And then you've got the lower part where it says, like I say, line four, additional withholdings. Sometimes I think by putting zeros on some of the lines in there, it actually makes you exempt, and therefore it's not withholding the normal tax code. So if you owed money this year, I would definitely say consider looking at your W-4 form so that you can actually make sure that you had enough money filed to, you know, to take out. No one likes to owe taxes, especially if you're working on a regular paycheck and you're like, okay, this is my usual situation. Why am I now having to deal with this? Don't really know the answer, guys. All I can tell you how to fix the problem. Because I will say also, many people made a lot more money in interest this year. You put the money in the bank, you made more money, and no taxes came out of that. So sometimes you owe a little bit more because of the growth of your money. So again, just making sure that you're tracking all the right information. And if you are making extra money outside, be that through Social Security, because many people do not have any withholdings come out of their Social Security, be it being from stocks, dividends, interest, any of those, and taxes are not coming out, prepare yourself before you come to the tax person. And then we have to turn around and say, ah, you know what? You do owe a few dollars. And then you're like, why? You know, because this. So just prepare so you know what you have going and you're able to make sure you have all of the right information that you need to run that the way you need to. So just making sure that you don't run into the situation where if you owe money and you're not too sure what you need to do, there is ways of compensating. So it's a lot easier to pay it over a number of paychecks than it is at the end of the year. And there is often penalties that can be part of that as well. So you don't want to get hit with some of those penalties if you can stop that from happening. And that leads me to self-employed individuals that decide they do not want to pay quarterlies. Hey, it's a choice. Not really. The IRS basically says it's a mandate. You owe four equal payments based on the prior year. And if you don't file that, we are going to have a situation where you're going to pay penalties. Okay. Now, some people will say, I'd rather pay the penalties and pay all my money at the end of the year. That is fine. That is your prerogative, maybe I should say. But if you are a self-employed person and every year you're not able to pay your taxes, now you're getting yourself upside down and creating a whole different situation. And that becomes a problem. All right. Let's really quick. Let's hit Lisa and then maybe we can get the other one after the break. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Dr. Friday. I've got a question. My husband passed away in February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
We always filed married, filing jointly.
Yes.
And I'm still preparing for the 2023 filing. I'm hoping to get it done this week.
Sure.
Do I need to do anything differently because he passed away in February of this year? Right. For last year.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry for your loss. But the good news is no, the only thing you might need to fill out is a 1310. If there's a refund, there's going to be an additional form you need to complete that just says, as the spouse, I'm collecting all the refunds so that they know who's to get if there's a refund. If there's no refund and you're making a payment, then there's absolutely nothing. And in 2024, you're going to file married as well, because you were married in the year he passed away. So the big change won't be until 2025 for you.
Okay, because I was thinking I'd have to do head of household next year.
No, do you have a child or someone at home?
I have two children at home.
So you will, I mean, for someone like yourself, there's also the widow one, which if there's children at home, you can claim widow for 2 years after. It's pretty much the same as head of household, but 2 years after the death of the other parents. So yes, you'll be good for another few years and then you can go head of household. That will be determined whichever way, but 2024 will still be married.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Well, thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, Lisa. All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll hit Angela in Nashville. This is the Dr. Friday Show. We'll be right back. All righty, we are back here live in studio, and let's head right over to Angela in Nashville so we can find out if we can help her. Hey, Angela.
Hi, Dr. Friday. Thank you for taking my call. So I already submitted my taxes, but the thought occurred to me that I actually drew Social Security for the first time starting last year. So I didn't submit that. So I imagine I have to make a fill out an addendum.
Yes, an amended return, actually. It's a 1040X. You're going to need to, potentially, at least you're going to want to check. Uncle Sam will be more than enough to. Theoretically, Uncle Sam will probably send you back a change letter saying you had not reported all of your income, and they will estimate. But if you owe money, it's better to know that in advance. If they have a refund, they may just change and take your take part of your refund, not knowing your situation. But yes, I would say, did you do them yourself, Angela, or did you go to somebody?
I did. I went to a preparer. And you know, I figured I would have to admit it. I just wanted to submit it. I, you know, didn't want to wait to the last minute.
I think that's
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, do you know, I didn't receive anything from the government with regard to, you know, the Social Security.
You know, that does happen from time to time. You should have received like a trifold paper that would have a red center on it. If you didn't, you can call them and they will, I think they will mail you. They will not fax you because I think we've tried that a few times, or email, but they will mail you a duplicate form. So you might want to call that and get that in hand before you make sure that, you know, whenever you started receiving it, that it will have the detail, how much you received and anything else that might be pertinent. Okay.
Alrighty. Last question. So like with your company and how you want to tell them what you want to withhold. For example, if you're married with children and you want to withhold, you know, maybe four or five. How do you do that with the Social Security? Do you know what the
Social
form
Security?
That is,
you or? Don't. It's a Social Security is a little different. They're going to take a percentage. So you're going to need to know what tax bracket you're in. So when, so whoever you go into, just might want to ask them, you know, what's my, not your actual tax bracket, but ask her or him what your effective tax bracket. It's usually much lower. You may be in the 22% tax bracket, but maybe only pay 14% average tax. Ask them what your effective tax rate is. And that way you can use that when you're talking to Social Security.
Thank you so much for your help and your answers. Have a good day.
No problem. You too. Thank you, sweetheart. All right. So, yeah, sounds like, and Angela, that I can't tell you how many times we have one that came in the other day and we don't know what we did not report because the government's really good about saying, hey, we've held back or we're changing your tax return. But sometimes some of the letters will say we did it because of this, this, or this reason, and not knowing which one of those things apply. I much prefer the letters where the IRS says we've changed it and here's the reason that this is what's not matching up. And many times it's really not a change that's going to affect you in some ways, even though the love letter says, oh, we're going to charge you $5,000. It's because they didn't have the basis in some cases on the stock sales. So as once we get that filed and submitted and accepted, then that usually can take care of itself. But you don't know until you're dealing with the situation. And right now it's still difficult to be dealing with IRS situations. I will say that the tax advocate office does an excellent job here in Nashville, Tennessee, even though some of the revenue officers that you try to deal with here in the state, it can be difficult to get them on the phone and to follow up with situations. And part of it is obviously in the middle of tax season when we're trying to do that and everyone's really busy. So be patient with that. But if you do have a major or you have something where you have the intent to levy letters and they're coming out and, you know, getting much more aggressive, then you definitely want to go in and just, you know, either do a 911 to the tax advocate office or make an appointment to the IRS office. So they are open again so that you can actually try to get some sort of resolution, or maybe even it's just the getting a payment plan set up. getting something done where you can make a monthly payment, and that way they're no longer sending you nasty grams when it comes to that kind of thing. Because nothing, no one likes love letters. Love letters can just be a bit overwhelming, especially nowadays where they send one to you, one to your spouse, and then one for every year. And if you've got 4 or 5 years, you can end up with 10 love letters in one day. And that's a bit stressful for some of my clients. So very important to make sure that you're, you know, tracking, but do not just take all of those love letters and throw them in a drawer, because, you know, that is going to pretty much eventually lead to the IRS coming and taking action against your payroll or going into your bank account. I had this time of year, of course, I get to fortunate enough to see many, many of my clients, and some of them still, you know, oh, I don't want to give the IRS my bank account. But, you know, working with the IRS now for 20 plus years, one thing I will tell you is if you have your Social Security number tied to a bank account, the IRS knows about that bank account. Doesn't mean they're going to do anything. Doesn't mean they're going to take anything. But if you are in trouble with the IRS, you're ignoring them or not making plans or doing things, they can come right in and do what they need to do. Sometimes it's just to get your attention so that you'll start doing what needs to be done. But that being said, there's nothing worse than thinking that you have, rent money in the bank, and then you find out that money is gone. And I will say we've had only a handful of cases this has ever happened. But if you have IRS issues and you have bank accounts with your children, because children can't open up their own bank account without an adult, they can also take that money because the bank account is tied to the adult. So be very careful if you have IRS issues. You may want to make sure that the money that the children have are not in your name, if that's at all possible. All right, let's hit Bill in Nashville real quick. Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Well, when my wife died last year, am I eligible for a step-up in basis on the real estate?
So was it held jointly, Bill, when you guys purchased it?
No.
Was it in your wife's name alone?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So then the answer is, if it was in your wife's name alone, yes. When you inherited that property, you get a step-up in basis.
Now, should I have had an appraisal done right off, or can I still have that done, or how does that work?
So my personal opinion is to get an appraisal or to get an appraiser to do a opinion, I think is what they call it. But you need something that somebody can say within 60 days of the passing of your wife that this was the value of this property based on said comps. Just like if you were going to buy real estate anywhere else. That way, is this a primary home, Bill?
Yes.
Okay. So then you're probably going to continue to live in it. So that may be, you know, so a number of years from now, if you decide you want to sell, you're going to need to have that appraisal to be able to use for your justification. Because obviously the only information we would have prior to that would have been the value that she had paid for the house originally. So you need that appraisal to be put into your documents to create your new step up in basis.
Okay. Well, I didn't do that. Is it possible to for someone to look back and do that now?
Absolutely. Yes. You might want to find, maybe if you know a real estate person or whatever, you just need to find a real estate person that will then give you an appraiser. They can go back based on comps at the time of her passing. It's been done many times.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem, sir. Thanks for the phone call. Sorry for your loss.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. So we are getting close to our last break here. If you want to join the show, you can at 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986 is the number here in the studio. Taking your call, talking about things that we need to make sure we do so that we keep Uncle Sam off our back, right? Or if Uncle Sam is already on your back and you're like, okay, I need to get out from under this. Maybe your time has come where you're just like, I need to make arrangements. I need to do an offer and compromise. I need to do a fresh start. I need a payment plan. I don't know, because each person is different and we need to figure out what's going to work best for you. But whatever those things are, you need to make sure that you are not just ignoring them, because sooner or later, when you really want to go either sell your real estate, because now they've put a lien against it. So when you sell, guess what? They're going to take their share. They're going to make it their asset. And then that way, when you sell, they're going to try to do what they need done, or they're going to turn around and they're going to say, hey, that piece of real estate that you have over here, it's not your primary home and you owe us. So we're going to force you to sell. And yes, if it's not your primary home, the IRS can mandate selling that property if you have not made arrangements to do something else. It's that simple. You either make arrangements. And in some cases, that arrangement may be that you have to sell or take a mortgage against an existing property that you have to make it work for you. All right, let's hit Ron before the break. That way he doesn't have to wait through the break. Hey, Ron.
Hello, how are you today?
I am good.
Good, excellent. I got a quick question for you about standard deduction. I've done,
sure.
Done it myself, a 1040 SR.
Mm-hmm.
And I check one box in that section, and I've got to the latter stages of the tax return, and it asked how many boxes are checked. Well, I've also filed checked the box single in the filing status. So
okay.
Is that one check box in standard deduction, or is that two, counting the filing
one.
Status? Of,
okay, just one.
So that's just one.
Yep.
And I got one other question, quick question.
Sure. No, you're good.
I've got my ex-wife lives in my home with me,
mm-hmm.
and she makes about $12,000 a year, so she doesn't, I guess, necessarily have to file her taxes at that rate. Plus, she's on Social Security and Medicare. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Go ahead. So last year, what I had done was I filed her under head of household. I mean, I filed myself under head of household. She had filed last year, and I did get a letter that somebody else had filed for her, mm-hmm. that was then herself. And she realized that she probably didn't have to do that and didn't file this year. So can I file her as head of household this year?
Yeah, theoretically, you're legally divorced. So she is a dependent of yours if she's making $12,000. Or is she making $12,000 plus Social Security and Medicare, or the $12,000 is her Social Security and Medicare?
That's it.
Just Social Security and Medicare, nothing else.
Correct.
Okay, then yes, she can be a dependent. They don't consider that earnings. So, you know, and you're probably providing her room, board. I mean, I'm just saying supporting a large part of her lifestyle since there's not much income there. So you could be head of household.
And if I file head of household on her, would she have a chance of losing her Medicare or Medicaid because she's filing as a dependent under me, or I'm filing her as a dependent under me? Is there a chance that she would lose her Medicaid?
How old is she?
She's 72.
Oh, no. No, that would have no effect. It was only if she was on disability or something that would come into play.
Well, that makes quite a difference in my refund.
I would imagine it would. But then again, you have a second individual that you're supporting. The biggest thing is you probably just want to do a support test. I'm pretty sure you know, making sure you're supporting her more than 50%. You know, when you consider all the overhead and what she has, I would say that that's probably not hard to do, Ron. Okay.
So what would I do with the letter they sent me about her filing last year? And then
nothing. I mean, I'm assuming when you filed last year, you took her off and you filed single. This year, she hasn't filed, so you shouldn't have a problem.
Very good. Thank you so much for your help today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you so
much. No problem. Thanks. All right, we're going to take our last break for the day. You can reach us here in studio, at least for a few more minutes, 615-737-9986. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty, we are back here live in studio for the last part of the show. You can reach us for a few minutes at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. 9986, taking your calls here in studio. So if you want to make sure you've got everything going the way you need to go, again, just like you hear callers, make sure you're thinking about what the situation is, what you have going on, and then that way we can make sure that we are spot on when it comes to doing what we need to do on our taxes. Nothing really to be afraid of, just making sure that we get them done right so that we don't have to worry about all the other situations that go with it, right? If you do need help, I know our phone lines have went crazy. At this time, we aren't able to take on any new clients directly, but we can get you extensions filed, and then we can go ahead and do what we need to do when it comes to getting you in after tax season and getting you squared away and making sure we've done everything we need to do to get you set up. If we can help you with any kind of issues you may have with the IRS and, you know, just get you back so you have what you need done and where you're going for it. So again, if you need help with that, or if you've got a question, you can join us here. We've got about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes left. 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986, taking our call, dealing with any kind of issues you might have with taxes and making sure that at least you're going the right direction so you can make sure you have what you need, when you need it, and how you need it, so we can make sure, you know, I mean, last thing anyone wants is getting a love letter. It's that simple. When you get those letters in the mail, you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to take care of this? Are they going to take my house? Are they going to take something from me? And you don't know the answer because, and it's not, I mean, to think that the IRS cannot take your house or to think that the IRS cannot get into your bank account or to take your paycheck is a bit silly because of course they can. I mean, if you have ignored them, if you have not given them the information, if they've been trying to track you down and all you've done is move and relocate, then we're good. We're time to go do what we need to do and move forward. But if you have been communicating, if you have been doing what you can, maybe you haven't been able to keep a good payment plan because maybe you've lost the job or someone in the something's happened within the family and you're able to do what you need done, then you're going to have to make do with what you can do. But communication is the secret to making sure you have what you need. You need to keep that communication open so that you can make sure that you're able to achieve what you need to achieve and not have the IRS stepping back on you and saying, oh my gosh, they're going to do this. And there's nothing worse than your employer finding out that you have IRS issues by them sending notices to them saying that they want you to levy their checks, right? They want to take in and take your paycheck from you in some fashion. So if you're having those kind of issues, you need to have that communication. And again, I know I have people that keep logs that have said, I've tried to call the IRS at this time. This is the number I called. I tried to call here. And every time I've been on hold for 2 hours, I got someone and then they hung up on me. So I understand the frustration, but the fact is you still have to make that resolution. You still have to communicate with them and you still have to get that. So if you need help with doing that, that's what we do. We deal with the IRS all the time, and I know that not everybody is going to have a perfect situation, and sometimes people don't think they can afford to pay the IRS, but the way the IRS calculates debt, it's not the same way as you might sit there and say, well, I don't have any extra money by the end of the month, but theoretically, the IRS is saying, hey, you know, you have your child in private school, you have 3 cars, and there's only one of you, and you have 2 car payments. These are things that they consider excessive, and therefore they may give you time to resolve it. But if they can't, then they're going to say you need to sell one of those cars, right? That you need to consider taking your kids. And yes, I was sitting in a meeting about 4 or 5 years ago with a revenue officer, and her resolution was going to submit to her employer that they needed to take their children out of private school. The advantage we had was the school was because of the child being on the spectrum, and we had to have doctors and all kinds of different things showing that the schooling was essential. Therefore, we got it removed. But, you know, not every time is that going to be the situation. So really understanding how the tax law works, what you can do to protect yourself and your assets, and what you need to be doing so that the government doesn't kind of just take the bull by the horn and say, here, this is what we're going to do. first and foremost is filing your taxes. And right now we're in the midst of filing 2023 tax returns. So either complete your tax return or file an extension so that way you've got enough time to resolve it within the tax code, which means until October if you have a proper extension done. That does not extend the money due. So when you file an extension and you know that you owe $20,000, but you know what? You file an extension either in hopes that you can raise the $20,000 or put it off a little later. It's not extending that money. So penalties and interest is starting as of the time you owed that money. It's not going to extend out to October. Otherwise, all of us would extend our taxes to October because no one wants to pay their taxes any earlier than they have to, right? So make sure that if you know you've prepared your taxes, okay, I've got a balance due. If you file the taxes, collections will start and you need to have a way of what you're going to do to make those payments. If by delaying it, you're delaying that situation, then you just understand that penalties interest is going to increase from the time that you actually had that situation. So we're getting to the end of the show. Here's what we got to do. First, if you're interested in what we're talking about, you can certainly go to www.drfriday.com. Sorry, drfriday.com is my website. You can find out more about who we are and what our firm does. If you would like to reach someone in the office, you can give us a call on Monday at 615-367-0819. We can help you file an extension, and then we can try to get you scheduled in next week or the weeks after the 15th and see if we can't help you get some sort of resolution and resolve your tax issue, or just get 2023 filed so that way you're in compliance and everything's good. If you need help with a payment plan or something, some of that can be very simply handled. Or you can email friday@drfriday.com. Again, friday@drfriday.com. That is what we do. As an enrolled agent, I'm licensed by the Internal Revenue Service. That's who I am. Dr. Friday, enrolled agent. That sounds like one of those little TV show things. And I'm an enrolled agent licensed by the Internal Revenue Service with taxes, or you need representation in front of the Internal Revenue Service, then you need to call our firm. We're going to be the best that you can have. And again, that number will be 615-367-0819. If you've got questions, because you don't know, should I be going bankrupt? Should I be dealing with the IRS? I thought the IRS only had 10 years to collect, and why are they still collecting on 2011 on me? There are answers to those questions. And if you need answers, we can help you again. 615-367-0819 or email friday@drfriday.com. That will be the simplest way for us to try to get time to get you in, to resolve your situation, or to help you understand what you need to do and what you don't have to do. But most important, don't ignore the love letters. As we always say in Australia,